true life and music history, the Ants Human Stars podcast, with your hosts, Caleb and Digo. Are you ready? Steady. Go.
My piece is about the infamous, the one and only Marvin Gaye, with an E, by the way. This is coming. This is important.
You didn't know that? A cute little story. I remember my cousin. He was like, he had to have been like, I don't know, 14 at the time. Mm-hmm. I had a bunch of my little cousins. I took them all out to like eat, go see a movie, and a song came on and it was Marvin Gaye, and I was like, oh, that's Marvin Gaye. And he's like jamming on to it, and then he just like, he gets silent, and he's sitting in the passenger seat and looks over at me, and he was like, was he really gay? Like, in all seriousness, and I was just like, no, it's okay. He was not really gay. That's just his last name.
But he did add that E himself. Is not a family name. Correct family name. So
also gay that. Without the E is the family name.
So our Marvin here. Ready?
Ready.
Steady.
Go.
Born in 1939, way back in the day. He'd be old as shit if he's still alive, so good that he's dead. He was born in Washington, D.C.
Really?
Open the door. 1939, okay. Washington, D.C., as Marvin Gaye with just a G-A-Y. But no, he was not actually gay, I guess. Who knows? He's known as Prince of Soul, and began his career singing in his father's church before rising in stardom and producing several hits, including Let's Get It On, Sexual Healing, I Heard It Through the Grapevine, Gonna Be Mine.
I only know the Gladys Knight version.
Heard it. Okay.
Let's start. He did Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
He did a lot. Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Gaye was raised under the strict control of his father, Reverend Marvin Gaye Sr. So, remember when I was telling you when I was writing these notes, like, I had to go back and, like, clarify, is it Marvin Gaye or is it Marvin Gaye Sr.? Because gotcha. And even when I'd be reading a sentence and I see that they incorrectly put the E, or they didn't put the, it was just messed up all over the place. So,
real messy.
If I screw up, it's because, I mean, this is just a messy article. Messy articles all around. Reverend Marvin Gaye Sr. So, on one of his father's first missions as a preacher, it was at a church in Norristown, Pennsylvania. Gaye Sr. impressed the congregation, and the church made him a bishop. According to Marvin Jr., his father was known as a healer. Gaye Sr. eventually settled as a minister of a local House of God church in Washington, D.C.
Right here.
Yeah, right here. And when his son was around 4 or 5, he brought him to his church, and he brought him to church congregation and revivals, and he brought him to sing for the audience. According to Marvin Jr.'s relatives, Gaye Sr. coached him on piano lessons, which Marvin Jr. learned by ear. And this, unfortunately, was one of the very few stable times in the father and son relationship. If anybody knows what this story will lead to, well, it's obvious. Gaye Sr. left the House of God altogether in the mid-1950s after not being named chief of the apostle of the church. I don't know. I guess he was like, I'm hot shit. You got a name. I didn't get that. But like,
see, he wasn't there for church. He was there for the title.
He was there for the title. He wanted to lead. He wanted the crowd. He wanted power, I guess. Yeah. And according to Marvin Jr., that's when my father lost his healing powers. So basically, Professor X was like, get the fuck out of my school. Like, you ain't good enough. Like, you ain't got powers.
I can't. You don't have power.
Yeah. Like, what's his name? Beast. Go take him to the bus. Like, get him out of here. Marvin Jr. developed love for R&B and doo-wop And that would set a foundation for his career. Mm. In the late 1950s, Marvin Jr. joined a vocal group called the New Moon Glows. And it wasn't long before Marvin Jr. came to the attention of Detroit music impresario Barry Gordy Jr. Do you know this guy?
Yeah, Barry Gordy.
I know why he's famous. But
yeah,
I mean,
he created Motown.
He was signed to Gordon's legendary Motown Records. About Barry Gordy Jr. and Motown Records, for those that don't know, it was the most successful black-owned music company in the history of the United States, for one, and hosted the likes of the Supremes, the Jackson 5, and Stevie Wonder. In September 2016, President Barack Obama honored Gordy, among other cultural icons, with the National Medal of Arts. At the ceremony, President Obama spoke of Gordy's contribution to American culture, saying that he helped to, quote, to create a trailblazing new sound in American music. As a record producer and songwriter, he helped build Motown, launching the music careers of countless legendary artists. His unique sound helped shape our nation's history, end quote. Oh, Obama. Just kind, good words, well said, poetic.
We miss you.
Yeah, you know, grammatically correct.
Take a deep breath.
Marvin Jr. was also a trailblazer on his own right, and showing his stripes as Motown's Renaissance man.
That's right, yeah.
Marvin Jr. went on to break into the top 40 for the first time on his own in 1962 with his solo hit Hitchhike. I have no idea about that song. I didn't even hear it. I didn't bother, but you know.
Hey, it's okay. It was the first.
It was the first one. I'm sure it was good. I mean, yeah. It had to be, right? Throughout the 1960s, Marvin Jr. would show his immense range, churning out solo dance hits and romantic duets with hit makers like Diana Ross and Mary Wells. Can I get a witness? No, I don't know who Mary Wells is. Of course, Diana Ross, but I don't know who Mary Wells is.
She was like the main female artist from Motown Records, like in the beginning when it first started. Everybody else was like in groups, and she was like a solo artist. Anyways, okay, finish.
Can I get a witness? And I heard it through the grapevine, were some of Marvin Jr.'s biggest hits of the period, and later achieving its place as Motown's best-selling single of the 1960s, the I Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Mm.
Now back to Gay Sr. Gay Sr., he was born the first. This is, it just went wrong here. The first of 15 children.
Dang.
Oh, God. That means you were just neglected.
Like, yeah. And it gets everything.
It gets even worse. To George and Mamie Gay on October 1st, 1914, on a farm along Catnip Hill Pike in Jessamine County, Kentucky, and was raised in Lexington, Kentucky. He had a troubled childhood where his physically abusive father often beat his mother and siblings. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what happens here. If you have an abusive father, it tends to mean that you will be an abusive father to your own children and to so on and so forth. If you don't deal with the trauma, it just gets passed on. That's just how it happens.
Gotta break that curse.
If your father is abusive, please get therapy. Or, I mean, if anybody is abusive, like your parents are abusive, get fucking therapy.
Yeah.
It's not natural for your parents to treat you like shit. So get fucking therapy.
Get help.
That's how serial killers manifest. Like, they just have shitty ass upbringings. Mm-hmm. And like Ted Bundy, apparently, like his sister was actually his mom, and then his grandfather was actually his father. I don't know. It was crazy. It was like this crazy shit. I'm like, see? Ew. See?
Yeah.
He should have addressed this shit.
Yeah, long time ago. Messing people
fucking
up.
Fucking unibrow motherfucker.
This is why I say people need to take having kids way more seriously. Not just this willy-nilly, I'm pregnant. Like, anyways.
Let me just chew this ice real quick.
Chew.
In turn, Gay Sr. was described as a strict and sometimes overbearing father to his four children. According to his children, Gay Sr. would make them observe an extended Sabbath, which was every Saturday. Gay Sr. was against the Christian tradition of attending church on Sunday, accusing them of going against observing God on the Lord's Day, which he contended was on Saturdays. According to Marvin Jr.'s sister, he was someone who, he being the father, was someone who never spared the rod. He was always very, very strict. This is in reference to the saying, spare the rod, spoil the child. So if you understand that, it's like catch, what's it called? Starve a fever, feed a cold. So here was Senior just, you know, being very abusive. Gay Senior will also question his children on biblical passages, administering beatings if they answered wrong. Gay Senior's children also suffered from bedwetting, which led to more beatings. I was a bedwetter, I admit. It also ended when I had this dream, like this final dream of like ongoing nightmare. Psychology. Anyway, that's for another time.
I was going to say,
time. Gay Sr. administered most of his harshest punishments on Marvin Jr. From the age of 7 well into his teenage years, Marvin's life consisted of brutal whipping, since Gay Sr. would strike him for any shortcoming, including putting his hairbrush in the wrong place or coming home from school a minute late. Marvin Jr. would later say, living with father was like living with a king, and all cruel, unchangeable, cruel, and all-powerful king. If it wasn't for mother, who was always there to console me and praise me for my singing, I think I would have been one of those child suicides you read in the papers. Alberta Gay, wife of Gay Sr., later stated that her husband hated Marvin, and as she told David Ritz, the author of Divided Soul, The Life of Marvin Gay, she told him this, quote, my husband never wanted Marvin and never liked him. He used to say he didn't think he was really his child. I told him that was nonsense. He knew Marvin was his, but for some reason, he didn't love Marvin. And what's worse, he didn't want me to love Marvin either. Marvin wasn't very old before he understood that. Mm. Following Marvin's musical career beginnings, he refused to be in the same room with his father for a number of years. Makes sense. I mean, like, you know, once you're like, you know, old and grown, and you don't like your parents, you're out of there. Like, exactly. Worse, if they're abusive, you just want to get the hell out. As you should, and again, get therapy, though. You know, and there's all for people out there who are like, oh, but you know, it's difficult or it's expensive. There are ways, there are free offerings, there's a community. Just get somebody. I mean, at least talk to somebody.
I was gonna say,
it doesn't have to be a professional therapist.
That's find somebody to talk to, but write that stuff down or something.
Something, sing about it.
Get it
this
out.
Is not good enough for Marvin, I guess. This decision, amongst others, led to Marvin adding the E to his final name, which it was, as it was stated, was done to quiet any rumors of his sexual orientation and to emulate his idol Sam Cooke, which has a E at that end. And to add even more distance from his
from and do his you know who Sam Cooke is, Diego?
Now I do. As of a week.
Good.
He eventually purchased a house on the corner of 15th and Varnum in the black middle class section of Washington, D.C. And he did move his parents out of the projects and into the new house where his parents would reside until the early 1970s. His mom stopped working so that she can enjoy the security of owning a house, and the new residence was roomy and spacious with large outside porches, but Marvin Jr. didn't visit often due to the ongoing strained relationship with his father. Obvious. I have to go home to my parents every so often. I love it. It's fine. But I get it. I mean, even like spending 3 months with my parents. I mean, you live with your mom.
No, and I'm like,
but you get it, right? You're like, even when things are good with your parents, it could be a strained relationship.
Yeah,
just because
but if
you're
it's already
older,
bad. Yeah,
it was already bad. Fuck. No. Get out of there. Get up.
Run, Forrest.
Run. In 1968, however, Martin Jr. extended an olive branch, giving his father a Cadillac as a present. But he said his father's response was, not affecting, not affectionate. Yeah. 4 years later, Marvin Jr. Got together with his parents in Washington, D.C. Because the city honored him with Marvin Gay Day. and it was called Marvin Gaye Day, a day Marvin Jr. later said he actually felt his father was finally proud. But it's in quotes. So
like his version of proud.
As proud as this father could be. By the early 1980s, Gay Senior, Marvin Jr.'s marriage, Senior. It's too many gays in my life. Gay Senior's marriage to Alberta had deteriorated, according to his wife in 1984. The couple hasn't shared the same bed in nearly 10 years and were now sleeping in separate rooms. But doesn't every older couple, I mean, like, my parents sleep in separate rooms. Mm-hmm. I know that so many older couples, they're just, this is the snoring. It's the, we've been here, done this. We're not having sex anymore. We're old. Like, fuck it. I'm over here. You're over there. I want to watch the TV. I want to watch what I want to watch. You can watch whatever you want to watch. You leave the light on, like, everything. It's like, I got my own bathroom. I get it. So, but me personally, I'm going to cuddle with my partner until we're dead. You know, I sleep in another room. Are you kidding? Even if we're old as fuck, I'm going to want to cuddle.
That's how I feel. I'm like, you're dealing with me. Okay.
Yeah. If I snore.
Even now, when me and like, he gets hot and I'm just like.
I do have that.
But
in the bed.
But that's just, it's just, he takes the covers off and like, all right, I'm still under here. And I like, cool we make down, it work.
And then in the morning, with chili, you get you roll back in. Exactly. Exactly. It's fine. It's fine.
I don't need you to cuddle with me in the middle of the night when I'm actually sleep, because I don't know you're there. I'm asleep. Right. But yeah, like, as I'm falling asleep, I need you. And then, yeah, when you wake up in the morning, then yeah, we can, let's make it happen again.
Exactly. On Christmas Day 1983, Marvin Jr. gave his father an unregistered 38 caliber Smith & Wesson pistol to protect him from intruders and murderers after Marvin Jr., now an alcoholic and heavily addicted to cocaine. Pause. I'm not shaming him. In the 80s, even now, even much less so, but like, let's face it, in the 80s, if you're a man, a black man, and you like, I should get psychological help, you think that was like kosher with your friends? Like, could you, as a man, a black man in the 80s, be like, yeah, I'm seeing a psychiatrist, and expect your friends and family to be like, oh, cool, man.
Congratulations.
Oh, that's good. No, you'd be ridiculed. You'd be like, man, that you, what? Like, you're a sissy.
And then you go over to church, it wouldn't even be that. It'd be like, no, you just need to, like, pray.
Yeah, or whatever. Like there was no support for that. So I don't blame him for going down the route of alcoholism and drug abuse, especially when you're rich and famous.
The access.
You got the money, you got the problems, and you don't have support. Drugs are available. Well, hey. But God, why do you have to choose cocaine? Anyway, now that he was addicted to drugs, he felt someone, I think this is the inference, that because he was on the drugs, he was kind of wacky, and he felt that someone was seriously plotting to kill him or his family, and he kept several other guns in that same home. But he gave that one gun to his father. On March 31st, 1984, Gay Sr. was angry because he could not locate a missing insurance policy document that he accused Alberta of misplacing that day. Marvin Jr. awoke from his sleep and commanded Gay Sr. to leave his mom alone. However, neither father nor son had physically attacked each other that night. The next day, April Fool's Day, April 1st, 1984, Gay Sr. again began arguing with Alberta over the missing insurance letter. After Gay Sr. was heard yelling from downstairs, his son, dressed in his maroon robe, I could just picture him like, Dad, shut up, shouted downstairs and said, you know, if you want to talk to mom, do it in person. Basically, like, stop shouting, you know. Marvin Jr. also threatened him not to enter his room, according to interviews from Alberta Gay, the only other witness. When Gay Sr. did enter the room anyway, his son, angry, despondent, and heavily intoxicated at midday, by the way, shoved his father into the hallway, then hit him. The fight continued in Marvin Jr.'s bedroom, though, and then Marvin Jr. reportedly struck his father and kicked him and punched him severely. This is pieced together from, because the only people who were there was mom, dad, son. Mm-hmm. There were no witnesses other than them. And, you know, you can imagine, like, whatever dad said, you can only take that with a grain of salt. Whatever mom said, she's stuck in a rock and a hard place. Like, how is she, like, she says, like, the truth, maybe that looks, makes her husband look terrible, but not enough of the truth has made her son look, I don't blame her if this was all, like, but a lot of what I'm telling you is from her. And a little bit of from dad, but I'll get into that later. Alberta separated them and convinced Gay Sr., go back to your room. But minutes later, Gay Sr. came back to the bedroom with a .38 pistol in hand and shot his son. The bullet penetrated Marvin Jr.'s vital organs, including his heart. Gay Sr. then walked forward and shot him a second time in the shoulder at point-blank range. See, that's when it, that's when, to me, I was like, no. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what was happening. First and foremost, this is your son. If I'm, like, I don't have a son, but I'm pretty sure if I hit my dad, he'd probably fight back. He'd probably do whatever, but he'd be like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, stop. Like, talk about me. Look, don't stop. Like, he would never in a million years want to kill me. Yeah. He would call the police on me to restrain me, but he would never want to kill me.
And not only that, that's the thing. That was more than just, like, you shot at him, but then you shot him again, like, purposefully. Like, you, there was intent. That, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. There was intent there. It wasn't just a matter of, like, oh, I'm in the moment and I'm upset. It was like,
also, Gay Sr. was obviously not a good dad.
Yeah, no. Like, yeah, no.
There's also, like, if you are thinking, and so I'm thinking of how I would, my dad, but my dad was a loving dad. Gay Sr. was not. So yeah, whatever was happening there, you know, this is after 40, 50 years of this shit. Like, so it's not like, so it all, this came to a head here. Gay Sr. hid the gun in the bedroom, in his bedroom under the pillow, went outside, sat at the front porch, and awaited his arrest, which came after police discovered Marvin Jr.'s body and confirmed that Gay Sr. had shot his son. Marvin Gaye Jr.'s body was later taken to California Hospital Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead on arrival at 1:01 p.m. April Fool's Day 1984. So this all took place in a matter of an hour. In an interview from Washington Post, Gay Sr. recounts the story. He took me from the back, Gay Sr. said, and he grabbed me and he slung me to the floor and he started beating me, kicking me. He kicked me everywhere he could kick me. Gay Sr. said he did not resist, but told his son to stay away. His wife was pleading with his son to stop, he said. He knocked me into the bed, and when I fell, my hand happened to feel the little gun under the pillow. Marvin was the very one who put that gun under my pillow 4 months ago. I thought the gun was loaded with blanks or BBs. I didn't know any bullets was in the gun. Gay Sr. said he did not know his son was dead until a detective told him hours later. I just didn't believe it. I thought he was kidding me. I said, oh, God of mercy. Oh. It just shocked me. I went to pieces, just cold. I just sat there and I didn't know what to do. Just sitting, he was just sitting there like a mummy. So many things wrong with that.
Right.
So many things wrong with that. I mean, like,
I'm like, I don't even know where to start.
I mean, just because, I mean, the fact that you shot him twice and you're like shocked that he's dead.
Yeah.
And point blank too.
Yeah.
Why don't you shoot the ceiling? I mean, you came with a gun. I mean, that's enough, right? Just, do you have the gun because you felt, if that was the case, you felt so threatened by your son, you have the gun in hand. Stop, or you know, that's step one. Well, if you really want to go down that path, or call the police or whatever, but like to walk into the room and shoot him, you Anyway.
And what would make you think that there's BBs or pellets in a gun? God,
that was like the worst.
No, but no. You know it was a real gun. It's in a fake gun. You picked up
that gun. That gun is heavy.
Yeah, exactly. You can tell it's loaded.
You cocked it because it was a .38 revolver. Mm-hmm. You knew.
Yeah.
When you saw that little chamber rotate and all those little, you know what this is.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen. Police Lieutenant Robert Martin, commander of detectives handling the case, said physical evidence and statements from Gay Sr.'s wife, Alberta, painted a different picture. There was no indication of bruises on his head, nothing like he'd been punched out or that kind of stuff. End of quote. The two were separated by the mother, Martin said, and Gay Jr., Marvin Jr. was on the bed talking to her when the father appeared at the doorway with a gun in his hand and fired one round. He said the father fired a second round at point blank range. Gay Sr. said he fired because he was trying to ward off his son's blows. Again, none of this is, you know, it's like he was being a white police officer to his own fucking son.
I was so afraid.
I was so afraid he could have come at me.
Exactly.
I do know, quote, this is from the father. I do know I did fire the gun. I was just trying to keep him back off of me. I just want the world to know it wasn't presumptuous on my part.
Yeah, as you shot him twice.
Twice, your son.
Mm-hmm.
During his first police interview, Gay Sr. stated that he didn't mean to kill his son, but he had been scared that he would be hurt and only shot him in self-defense. When the police asked him if he loved his son, Gay Sr. softly told them, "Let's say I didn't dislike him."
Wow.
The former minister was promptly charged with first-degree murder for his son's death. Gaines Sr. plead no contest to a charge of voluntary manslaughter, though. The fuck? Got reduced to voluntary manslaughter. On September 20th, 1984, during the sentencing hearing 2 months later on November 20th, Gay Sr. was allowed to talk, and tearfully, Gay Sr., at 70 years old, told the court, quote, "If I could bring him back, I would. I was afraid of him. I thought I was going to get hurt. I didn't know what was going to happen. I'm really sorry for everything that happened. I loved him. I wish he could step through this door right now. I'm paying the price now." Every time I hear these, because I listen to so much like true crime podcasts,
mm-hmm.
they're shit ass fuckers. Whenever it comes to like they're at the court and they're trying to say their piece, it's always about them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna suffer. I'm suffering. I'm paying the price. It's my own. I. Instead of being like, I can't believe I did this. My son, he's dead. My poor son. No, that's a real confession.
Yeah.
Like, this is still him being like, I'm just gonna say this and maybe it's gonna grant some, like,
You didn't actually
want to. The jury's gonna be like,
You didn't want your son to walk through the door. You didn't want to have to walk through the door to go to jail.
Exactly.
That's what that is.
Because
if you really loved him and felt that way, you wouldn't have shot him in the first place.
You would have treated him like your son back in the motherfucking day.
Exactly.
Following this, Gay Sr. was given a 6-year suspended sentence and 5 years probation.
Dang.
For the shoot. I know. So what the fuck? Again, so this my theme here is crimes of passion. And there is a little bit of leeway with, I think, jury and everything. When you're not doing it, it would have been totally different if there was like pre-planned and went off and killed his son. But it, like, even if it sounds ridiculous that he was defending himself, it did happen all in the moment. Like, it was a short time. It was passionate.
Yeah.
Okay. During this time, Alberta Gay had filed for divorce, and after 49 years of marriage, so she was like, oh, fuck, and I'm done with this kid. Gay Sr. eventually returned briefly to that home, but he had health issues that forced him to move to a nursing home, first in Inglewood, then in Culver City, California. Then he later died of pneumonia on October 10th, 1988, 9 days after his 84th birthday. Mm. Here are a few good things to end on when it comes to Marvin Gaye. and one really random fucking shit. Okay. Brah. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducted him in 1987, a year after his death. Then mayor of D.C., Marion Barry, everybody know, ever heard of him, declared April 2nd as Marvin Gaye Jr. Memorial Scholarship Fund Day in the city. Since then, a nonprofit organization has helped organize annual Marvin Gaye Day celebrations in the city of Washington. A year after that, Gaye's mother founded a Marvin Gaye Jr. Memorial Foundation in dedication to her son and helped those suffering from drug abuse and alcoholism. However, she died a day before the memorial was set to open in 1987.
Oh, wow.
In 1990, Gaye received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. 1996, Gaye posthumously. God damn it! This is what happens to podcasters like all the time. Yeah, they're like trying to,
and
I
was
like, yeah, I didn't practice this shit. I just like reading it. Anyways, he received. We know he's dead. Okay, I don't even need to say this. 1996, he came back from the dead and received the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame listed three Gaye recordings: I Heard It Through the Grapevine, What's Going On, and Sexual Healing among the list of 500 songs that shaped rock and roll. American music magazine Rolling Stone ranked Gaye number 18 on their list of 100 great artists. Of, I think that list that we were actually looking at the other day, the 100 greatest artists of all time. Maybe?
Oh, no, that was the singers.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever. The six other lists. Oh, okay. Here we go. 18th on the list of 100 greatest artists of all time, 6 on the list of 100 greatest singers of all time, and number 82 on the 100 greatest songwriters of all time. Yeah. In 2006, a park that Gaye frequented as a teenager was called Watts Branch Park was renamed Marvin Gaye Park in Washington, D.C. 3 years later, 2009, 5200 block of Foot Street in Northeast in Deanwood, Washington, D.C., was renamed Marvin Gaye Way. August 2014, Gaye was
inducted again.
Jesus.
He's already been dead for like two decades, but no, he was indicted again.
He was indicted again. He'd be inducted into the official Rhythm and Blues Music Hall of Fame. And here's the random shit. Are you ready? I don't know what to say to this other than
it's random. Slow clap.
In
dang.
July 2018, a bill by a Californian politician, Karen Bass, was introduced to rename a post office in South Los Angeles after Gaye and was signed into law by none other than
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, because this is a federal post office. So the only one who's signing anything at this level is none other than President Donald J. Trump.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? Like, what? This is, I like was reading this. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Okay.
Okay. You like.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what it's like. This is what it feels like. It feels like you just dumped over a gallon of orange juice all over the kitchen floor. But then you like you start cleaning like the kitchen counter like a little bit, you know? Like you like maybe you throw out that old lettuce in the like, you know, but you ignore the spill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
but you do
yeah,
that yeah. one good thing that you should do, but
You don't even clean up anything. You picked up the jug. You didn't clean up anything. The jug was turned over and you picked it up and you sat it up.
Like you just sat it upright. Like you didn't even throw it away. So, you just like sat
so
it
nothing
upright.
Else can spill out.
Right.
Yeah. That's all that was.
That
wasn't even. Nope. You haven't cleaned up anything. You haven't touched. You haven't thrown anything away. Nope. You just
made no sense to me.
Sat it up.
What was that thing that I said I was going to talk about later? So for all you ex-bedwetters out there, or maybe you're continuously bedwetting, I have a strong opinion that bedwetting, well, honestly, bedwetting can actually just be a straight up mechanical problem that you have yet to develop to overcome. Because, okay, if you're a guy, I don't know about women, I got nothing. But for guys, you know, you wake up and you got a huge ass hard on. That's basically the bottle cap for you, like, you know, like when you have the hard on, you have to pee. And so your body eventually comes up with the mechanics to stop you bedwetting. Basically, instead of peeing, it just gives you a hard on, so it slaps closed.
Wait, is this like scientific? Is that real? Yeah, is that like straight what up? Happens?
Yes, yes.
Oh,
you know, so when you're hard, you know, you got the urethra,
and like it stops the I know exactly. The, and the so pee flow.
That's what it is. Yeah. That's all it is. That's what you develop that.
Oh.
But I think it's so. If for me, where I have a huge ass bladder, so I guess I've always had a huge ass bladder, even as a little kid. So I like guess would go to bed without going to the bathroom, and then had somewhere in the night, and my body wasn't ready to give me hard-ons yet, and I would be peeing. So, but that's the mechanical side of it to view. But me, I think it was that and psychological, because I had these intense reoccurring nightmares, and what would happen was I would be anywhere, say like right here, right now, and in the dream, and I'd like, you know, I'd drop a fork and I pick up and you'd be gone. And then I look around in the restaurant, everybody's gone. And then I knew they were coming. They being these men, sometimes one, sometimes two, dressed all in white, like spandex, like white, and just around their face would be open, and their face would be there, but their face was something hideous, horrific. And all they'd want to do is grab me, because I would be like, this is what I knew to do. Before, it's like, when everyone's gone, I knew I had to throw myself to the floor and wiggle so that my real self wake up.
Oh, like, wow. I knew that. Really?
Like, and sometimes it wouldn't work. Because I was too deep. And in come the men, and all they would want to do is flip me over and have me see their face, and I would wake up screaming. And sometimes bedwet because of the terror, or, wow, you know, whatever. So
how long did that go?
Like years. Fucking years. Like maybe I was like 6, 7, 8 before it ended. You know, probably 8 upper, you know, because it was... but I think, I guess, the psychological thing was maybe my body was feeling that I had to go pee, and in comes this dream, and the men were actually me needing to pee. Maybe that's what it is, because this went on forever. It would always be one thing similar to this. I would be hanging out with my friends, they'd be gone, I knew they were coming, throwing myself to the ground, you know, like trying to wake up. Anyway, the last one, I was on the highway, and I was driving a red Corvette. And I was like in traffic. And
as a kid, you're
it's a fucking dream. I can do whatever I want.
I think that's awesome that, like, as a kid, you're like, oh, now I'm driving.
I know.
Like, I think even dream kid me would have been like, man, I can't drive.
I can't drive. I'm on license.
Exactly. Like, how do we do this?
As you can imagine, all the cars in the road are gone. I look in my rear view. There's a truck, a tractor trailer. And I almost caught a glimpse of the guy in white driving. I almost saw the face. I was like, oh, you know. And then I knew, they're chasing me. I had to get off the road. I got off the freeway and ended up at my aunt's house. Barge into my aunt's house. They're having breakfast. I'm like, oh my God, thank God you guys are here. I turn around to grab the phone. The phone's dead. Turn around. They're gone.
They're gone.
And I'm like, oh no. And I look over the front door, and, you know, I see light from outside and then the shadows of them coming up to the door. And something happened in that moment. I was fed up, tired, angry. This is stupid shit. I don't want to throw myself on the floor. This is dumb. I go over to the front door, angrily open it. It's just a beautiful fucking day. And that was the last time I had that dream. And the last time I never bedwetted after that. So that's why there's a part of me that would like say, hey, bedwetting is psychological as well, because I have this that happened to me. So if you have kids and they're bedwetting, first and foremost, please, and my parents didn't do this. I mean, they understand. The memory should understand that your kid's still learning, you know, this is just the thing. But don't, first and foremost, please don't shame your child. That's not gonna help. Like, if you want them to stop bedwetting, shaming is definitely not gonna help. And figure out maybe like what's it's just mechanical on? And there's actually nothing going on, but you know, for me it was a dream, but for them it could be like the bully at school or something, you know. And to unravel and to click, it might actually help.
That's crazy that you, I just think it's crazy that you had such vivid,
oh yeah,
dream, and you remember.
I remember these guys.
Yeah, like that.
All in white.
When you're so young.
The terror.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I remember, like, I know there were a couple times, like, I did wet the bed.
I got a pee.
Well.
Don't go chasing waterfalls.
Thank you.
Da, na, 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 na,
and the lake that you're used to. Thanks, I'm glad.
Don't go breaking waterfalls. Unless you're Thanos from the Marvel series.
He like disintegrates waterfalls. He just snaps. Break them.
So, fight for what you love. Especially if it's your mattress.
Because y'all got to have a good relationship, okay? That's
you got to get plastic on that mattress if, you know.
Day by day.
Bless my parents. But fight for what you love, except for if it's murdering your child. Don't. Why would you even fight for that?
Exactly. Fight for what you love. Love your child.
Love your child.
And don't go chasing waterfalls. Don't
fight for what you love, but not waterfalls. If you love waterfalls, as you said, stand by it. Stand at the bottom of it.
Observe.
Take pictures.
Just
observe.
Just watch.
Don't get in the river water. But in all seriousness,
fight for what you love.
That includes yourself.
Thanks for listening to the Ants Human Stars podcast with Caleb and Digo. Stay connected and get updates about new episodes by visiting our website, antshumanstars.com, and by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a positive rating and review and share about us with your community on social media. Thanks, y'all. We really appreciate it.